This is File 23. Today's date is April 5th. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Barbara Pogue, senior moment. She's going to talk about the powerhouse in Taconic, her teaching experiences, Zoning Board of Appeals, the Democratic Town Committee, Owl's Kitchen, extras, Salisbury Housing Trust, and anything else she can think of. And she's got a wonderful story to end this about the clothes that she, somebody told about collecting clothes from Mount Riga. So here we go. I'm going to ask you the genealogical stuff first. What is your name?
Barbara Pogue.
And what is your birth date?
May 16, 1932.
And your birthplace?
Boston, Massachusetts.
And your parents' names?
Margaret Mullen and Walter Richard Berry.
And do you have siblings?
Yes.
And you have five, I think.
Five, yes. Not all alive.
Okay.
At the moment, but anyway, in chronological order.
Yes.
Constance, Robert, Marjorie, and me, then two younger brothers, Walter Richard Jr. and John.
Perfect. What is your educational background after high school?
I went to Boston University, Emmanuel College. I graduated from Emmanuel College. Spent my junior year and went back for graduate school to the University Laval in Quebec, Canada.
How do you spell the Laval?
L-A-V-A-L.
Got it right. Okay. And that was a master's in French?
Yes. Well, Master of Arts.
Master of Arts. Right. Okay. How did you come to the area?
My husband and I lived in Manhattan, and we liked to ski. And we used to go up to Vermont weekends in the winter to ski. And we thought on the way home one time, if we had some place to stay sort of halfway between New York and Vermont, it would make our weekends a lot easier. And through family connections and so forth, we heard of someone in this area who was a real estate agent, and he showed us a house in Great Barrington, which was very nice, but it had low ceilings.
Ooh.
And my husband said, no, 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 this is nice, but the ceilings are too low. So he said, you want high ceilings? So he brought us to the powerhouse in Taconic, Connecticut.
Ah, and when did you buy the powerhouse? You said 1965-ish.
Ish.
Okay, all right. Now, it did have high ceilings.
Rather.
Yes. 12 foot?
Oh. Now my husband could tell you.
Okay.
Well, actually, it would, we added a loft to it, so definitely two stories high.
What other work did you do on it? You said it needed work.
Oh, yes. It needed a lot of work. We installed that loft. We installed another bathroom up in one of the lofts.
Did you have to do a roof?
No, fortunately, no. As I recall, we didn't.
How about either heating or wiring?
Probably.
Mm-hmm.
I think my husband could tell you more of those details.
I'll ask him.
That's a guy thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. How long did you keep the house?
I would roughly 10 years, probably not quite.
Do you remember who you sold it to?
Yes. I don't remember his name, but they were New Yorkers, and they planned to be there only on weekends.
Did you ever get to go skiing after you bought this house?
No, the funny part of it is after we bought it, we were so busy working on it that we never we never left to go skiing. We skied locally at Catamount and Great Barrington.
Butternut.
Butternut, thank you.
It's a funny story. It is a funny story. Now, tell me about your teaching career. Did you start in Region 1, or did you start where?
No, I started in a very small town in western Massachusetts called Barry, B-A-R-R-E, and my maiden name is B-A-R-R-Y, so I was Miss Barry in Barry.
Well done. Well done.
That was just for a couple of years, and I moved to another town in Massachusetts, and then decided I wanted to try life in the big city. So I moved to New York and taught it in New Rochelle, New York.
And when you came here and bought the powerhouse in Taconic so that you could go skiing on the weekends, where did you start teaching in this area? Did you start at Salisbury School, or did you start in Region 1?
Oh, I've taught in so many schools in the area. Mm. It's hard to remember what the first one was. I don't know, probably.
Well, what were the schools that you taught in Region 1?
Well, Salisbury Central, Cornwall, Sharon. Those were the
three main ones.
Region 1. Right.
You didn't go to Canaan, and you didn't go to Falls Village or Kent.
No.
Okay. And then you went up to Salisbury School.
Salisbury School.
About, what, 1978-ish?
Probably, because I taught there for 20-something years.
Did you enjoy teaching in the private school?
More so than the public school? No, not necessarily.
Kids are kids, pretty much.
Yeah, I would say. There were duties in the private schools that I did not enjoy. For example, evening study hall and things like that.
Oh, yeah. When you were working at Salisbury School, do you remember any of the headmasters?
Oh, yes. Ed Ward, I think, hired me. And then Peter Sipple. And there was a gentleman who came for just a short time. I don't remember his name.
Okay. Now, you had a story about Berkshire School. Please tell me that story, where you were teaching at Berkshire School. That somebody had had called in the day after.
I just told you that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had retired from Salisbury School my last connection there was in June. Mm-hmm. And I, in September, I thought, I'm not going back to school. And I got a call from Art Charles, who had been the dean of students, I think, or dean of faculty or something at Salisbury School and had since transferred to Berkshire School. And he said, I just got a call from my French teacher who told me he's not coming back. And this was the day after Labor Day. He said, would you please... And I said, no, Art, I've retired. And he said, how many classes? And he said, 4. And I said, no, Art. He said, 3. I said, I've retired, Art. Well, how about 2? Okay, 2. And no Saturdays. And he said, okay, no Saturdays.
He was desperate.
So, I know. I should have asked for limousine service.
Yes, now that would have been an excellent idea. Oh, dear. Oh, my.
One thinks of these things too late.
did you teach there the full year, or?
Yes, I was there for that year.
Oh, my.
And he had promised me that it would only be for 1 year. But then at the end of the year, he said, could you please stay for another year? So I did. I stayed for the second year, making sure that they were hiring somebody.
Good, good.
But it was enjoyable.
When you taught French, did you teach conversation? Did you teach grammar? Did you teach literature? Basically, how did you...
All of the above.
When I was taking French in high school, it was all language lab. And you listened to tapes, and you repeated. And that's how I learned French.
Really?
Yes.
Because that's what they're doing now with Rosetta Stone.
That's what the way I learned, and this was back in the 60s in Great Barrington.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all language lab. And when I went to college, I wasn't really able to speak French because I had learned rote.
Mm-hmm.
Bonjour, mademoiselle, comment allez-vous? I had learned the rote, but I hadn't learned French to talk to people.
So if they didn't answer you...
In the words that I knew...
The next lesson on the language...
It was very difficult. Now, after you moved here, you got on several different boards. And we'll start with the Zoning Board of Appeals. What do you remember about that?
Well, it was an interesting thing, and I don't really know how that came about. I think it was through the Salisbury Democratic Town Committee. But it was interesting in that we had to make decisions on zoning matters, about which I knew nothing when I started, but one learns.
Oh, yes, yes. And I asked you if you actually did, I'm going to say, site inspections, or whether you dealt with paperwork.
No, it was mainly paperwork.
Mainly paperwork. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm assuming that the Zoning Board of Appeals means that you've gotten a decision from planning and zoning that you don't like and you are appealing that decision?
Well, somebody is appealing it, whether it's the board or a petitioner coming in.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So it can be either the board or...
As I recall, okay. Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. How long were you on that? Do you remember?
Oh, I would say maybe 5 or 6 years.
Did you enjoy the work? Or was it really grunt work?
No, it was enjoyable. I think I enjoyed the people that I was with. And mm-hmm. Don't ask me who they were.
I won't.
I won't. I can't remember that.
Okay. How about the Democratic Town Committee? That must have been early on.
Yes.
Okay. How did you get involved in that?
I remember, oh dear, I think her name was Margaret Gurney. Do you know that name?
No, but that doesn't mean anything.
Margaret Gurney, and I don't know how I knew her, but she said, oh, you would be perfect for the Democratic Town Committee.
And you have.
So she
were.
And I was on it for probably 20 years or so, during Charlotte Reed's tenure
mm-hmm.
in town. And she and I became very good friends.
Excellent, mm-hmm. excellent. And again, it was one of those things that you liked the people you were working with.
Yes, yes.
What does the Democratic Town Committee actually do?
Well, they, I think they choose people. They nominate people. They choose people to be nominated for the various offices in town.
Huh.
Selectmen,
anything
office
that's
on the ballot.
A ballot.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. When you were on the Democratic Town Committee, were you were you a secretary or treasurer or any of those positions?
Probably all of the above.
Okay.
One time or another.
Were you president? At any time?
I may have been. Yes, I think I was.
Probably if you were on that long. They'd get you one way or the other. Okay. Tell me about extras. That's fascinating. Tell me about extras.
Well, Bud Trotter was the first select man at that point. And I don't know whether somebody came to him or whether it was his idea, but there was obviously a need for parents who were working and had children going to Salisbury Central School who your child could not be at school before 8:30, I think it was, in those days. And so people who had to be to work earlier than that were really kind of up the creek. So whether somebody came to him and asked, I don't know how it came about, but a group of us, he asked me to be on this board, and Dick Tabor, I think, was there. Mm-hmm. And so we discussed the possibility of hiring someone to oversee children who arrived at school early and who stayed after school. So there was a program for before and after school.
That must have come in, I'm going to say, in the 90s perhaps, late 80s, early 90s?
Oh, earlier than that, I think.
I can check, because I remember that we had an after-school program, but it wasn't formalized into extras. And we teachers had to be on duty like quarter of eight, and the kids would come in before 8:30. But that was early on. Tell me how the name Extras came about.
Well, we were sitting around the table and talking about what this program would be like, and Dick Tabor said, oh, it's extended time. And I was sitting there with a pencil and paper, and I wrote down EXT, and then I thought, oh, extended time for recreational activities in Salisbury, EXTRAS. And voila, we had our name.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Do you remember other people that were on that early board?
Possibly Steve Victory.
Yeah, that makes sense. I did Lou Bucherry for extras. And I think he mentioned Steve Victory. And it would be for the children that had to be dropped off, like at 8 o'clock in the morning, so their parents could get to work. And it would end at 5 in the afternoon, from 3 to 5?
It seems to me, yes, there was an after-school, yeah.
Anything else you want to tell me about extras?
Sally Gevalt.
Ah, yes.
I think was on that early board.
They're familiar names, very familiar names. Okay. Let's go on to Owl's Kitchen.
Owl's Kitchen.
Okay. What does OWL stand for?
Older Women's League.
And that was what?
It was a group out of Washington, D.C., founded in Washington, D.C., by women advocating for older women, for Social Security, for programs that I guess either didn't exist that time for older women or just promoting
knowledge that they may not have had if they weren't in the marketplace or the workplace.
Yes, that's good.
Okay. Uh-huh. Are there national and local chapters of this?
Yes. Yes, at that point there were. We were one of the first local chapters, I believe. We, as a local chapter, we hosted a couple of gatherings at the Town Grove where we had representatives from other chapters, mainly in New England, but there was always a woman from Washington who came and presided.
And you were looking for a project, your local chapter, and what project did you come up with?
We came up with a food pantry.
And it's the only one in the United States, I've been told, that's, that oh, was an Owl's Kitchen
that
project.
That Owl's did, yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay.
It was, I don't know how we chose the name, Owl's Kitchen. We wanted it to be something connected with Owl, the yeah. older women's league. And I remember one time answering the phone there, and a gentleman wanted to make a reservation for...
Oh, for dinner. Okay.
So I had to tell him, no, we were not a restaurant. We were a food pantry. But you can see how one would
sure.
be confused.
Oh, yeah. I think that's wonderful. All righty. Do you remember when Owl's Kitchen, the food pantry, started? Was it back in the 70s, perhaps?
I would think so.
I think yeah. Sue Morrill indicated that maybe it was 75-ish in, mm-hmm. in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And why did you get involved?
Well, I think I was involved from the beginning with Mary Alice White
mm-hmm.
And Penny Grant.
Yep.
And as I said, it was political at the beginning.
Oh, sure.
And then... and. That's how I...
Was it a sort of a spinoff from the Democratic Town Committee? Or
no,
no. Not really?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
No.
And how long were you involved with Owl's Kitchen? Or are you still involved?
No, I had to retire when I went back. Well, I think it was 2 years ago. I got this other emergency call from Salisbury School where they were desperate for a French teacher because somebody was having a baby.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
So I had to leave it then, and on very short notice, but they were very, very nice to me.
And when you were on the board, I'm assuming that you were an officer, president, vice president.
Yes.
They know a good woman when they find one.
Secretary, treasurer, yes, all of the above.
How about fundraising? Did you get involved?
Yes, I did. I wrote most of the fundraising letters, I think.
And I've been told that Owl's Kitchen started giving food on Saturday mornings, and then within the last maybe 5 years, they started doing it Friday nights as well as Saturday mornings?
Yes, or is it alternate Friday nights? I'm not sure of that, but yes.
Mm-hmm. And where is the location that the clients come?
It is a building in back of St. Mary's Church in Lakeville. And I think I was instrumental in getting that location because I'm a member of St. Mary's Church.
It's a central location, and it makes a great deal of sense.
Yes. And we were very fortunate because the building was available, that at least the ground floor where we're located was available.
Oh, good. And you register clients.
Yes.
What information do you take from the client, a new client,
mm-hmm.
when they come in?
Your name, your address, how many in the family. But we do not ask anything about income or sources of funds.
Is it restricted to Connecticut?
Oh, no. We have people from Millerton, a few from Massachusetts.
Oh,
you know.
Okay.
That's why we called it the corner. The new name is the Corner Food Pantry, because we are the corner of Connecticut that's adjacent to Massachusetts and New York.
Now, I think I was told that the reason that you ask the number of people in the household is because that determines how much food they can take.
Yes.
Okay. And who sets up the shelves or the counters or so forth? When does that happen?
Usually Friday mornings. There's a group of volunteers. Sue Morrill is...
I keep asking her.
The chief putter honor of the
okay.
shelves.
But there's a group of volunteers that
yes.
come in Friday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then is there a different group Friday night that passes out the food?
Well, some of the same ones. Yes, and then some of those same ones would be back on Saturday mornings.
About how many people do you think volunteer for this?
I would say probably around 12, maybe. 10 to 15, let's say.
And where do you get the food from?
Well, in the summer, people with gardens are very generous. People in the area are very generous with things from their garden. But we do buy things from Lebon's and Stop and Shop, places in the area. We also now are associated with the Connecticut Food Bank, I believe. And so they have food at wholesale or below wholesale prices.
So you get it from a variety of sources.
Yes.
And then the fundraising that you've done goes to buy food.
Absolutely.
That you need.
Absolutely, yes.
And how... All right, I come in and I've got a family of four. How do I go about getting the food? And where do I go? Do I go to the shelves first? Do I go to the counter?
No, you go to the counter.
Okay.
And somebody will ask you... The only thing they will ask you is how many in your family, and you would say four.
Okay.
And then they will ask you very crucial questions like, would you like peanut butter with nuts or creamy?
Yeah, but that is crucial. That is
yes,
crucial.
It
oh,
is.
Yeah. And if I have a child that has a peanut allergy.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, I've gone to the counter. Uh-huh. And then do I go to the shelves?
The way it's set up now, I believe you go to the shelves on your way out.
And you can take?
Yes.
It's not prepackaged. You take what?
Right, okay. What you like, if you prefer. Chicken noodle soup to tomato soup, you can select that.
Okay. So someone that had a family of four would have the ability to take more food than someone that had a family of one.
Is alone, right.
Or if somebody had eight, they would take more
yes,
food.
Yes, yes. Okay. Uh-huh.
Is there a limit on how much you can take of one thing? I mean, can you take two jars of peanut butter, or is it just limited to one?
Well, I think it changes seasonally.
Okay.
In a way.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, if we got... if someone gave us a huge shipment of peanut butter, yes, we'd let you
okay.
take three, maybe.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. That makes sense. And you make up special boxes for seasons. For seasonal.
The holidays. Thanksgiving and Christmas, yes.
And it contains everything you'd need for a turkey dinner or whatever.
Yes, we buy the turkeys and then we assemble stuffing, cranberry sauce, everything that you would need. Mm-hmm.
The people in this area, not only are they generous, but they really do look after all special needs of any kind, whether it's food or shelter or the children I know at Salisbury Central sometimes would contribute money so that they could buy Christmas toys. And there's food drives and there's clothing drives.
Yes.
And so it's a very caring community.
Yes, we are fortunate.
You told me something about Helen Mahoney organized something at Salisbury Central.
Right. She organized food drives where the grades competed against each other to see how many boxes they could fill with things that they brought from home.
Wonderful.
Cereal, soups, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. peanut butter.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are certain staples that are given out.
Yes.
Such as peanut butter and
yes.
bananas.
Soups.
Soup.
Oh, bananas and toilet paper. Every week you get bananas and toilet paper.
Maybe I'd better start coming down. And Indian Mountain does something special, too.
Indian Mountain has a basketball game, I believe, where in order to get in, your price of admission is a donated food item.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And the churches do this, too.
Yes.
Not to get into church, but they do, I know in the Methodist Church, they ask for like spaghetti sauce the month of February or something like that. Uh-huh. So that there are donations left at the church.
Yes.
And how about Lebon's receipts?
Yes.
Those are collected and they...
They are collected and processed.
It's a well-run organization.
It really is, yes.
With just a few people. And I think, I don't know whether it was Barbara Nichols, I think she said that maybe there's 20 or 30 families that come between Friday and Saturday?
Oh.
Or more?
I would definitely say up to 30, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And nobody's ever turned away? No.
No, I can't.
I can't see that it would happen.
No.
I can't see that it would happen. Anything else that you'd like to tell me about Owl's Kitchen that's now the Northwest Corner Pantry?
Not Northwest, just Corner Food Pantry.
Just Corner Food Pantry, okay,
corner
thank you.
Corner Food Pantry. No, I can't think of anything else. I think you've covered pretty much all of it.
Then we will go on to the Salisbury Housing Trust, which is a nonprofit and private organization that provides low-income housing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who's the head of that?
Well, we've just sort of reorganized into getting all of the three housing groups in town together.
What are the three housing groups, so I get it right?
Well, let's see. Salisbury Housing Trust is mm-hmm. one of them.
That's
Salisbury Housing Commission.
Okay.
And I don't know. The other one would be
affordable housing?
Well, that was not in the title.
Okay, it's something else. Okay.
Yeah.
But you're involved in the Salisbury Housing Trust.
No, I think it's commission.
Salisbury Housing Commission? Okay.
I believe.
All right. Oh, who?
And Ann Kramer.
Okay.
Is now, I believe, in charge of the whole
business. The whole schmear, probably. She's a fun lady. She's a fun lady.
Super. She's done a great job.
And Dick Tabor was involved in this affordable housing early on.
Oh, way back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first affordable housing that Ann told me about was Faith Housing in East Meadow. Mm. That was the first one, and Dick Tabor was involved in that. And then Sarum Village came on board.
After that?
Yes.
Oh,
after
okay.
that. And you are involved with Sarum Village?
Yes.
Okay. And what's Sarum Village?
Sarum Village is basically low-income housing, subsidized to some extent.
Okay. How many units?
Oh, good question. I know that we've... I would say probably 18, but I'm not sure of that. But I know that we just got a grant
mm-hmm.
To build... Oh, dear, how many? I think 8 new mm-hmm. units. Some of them are 2-bedroom... I think one is even 3-bedroom. Maybe 1 or 2 or 3-bedroom. 2-bedroom and then 1-bedroom.
And you said that recently you had a tour.
Yes.
And it was, I think, you said it was quite an eye-opener.
It really was. It was just a beautiful apartment. I mean, I could move in there tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah.
It had just been painted and carpeted, but the layout was really very thoughtfully done.
Oh, good.
Especially the closet space was just amazing.
And that's important.
Oh,
very important.
Is.
Oh,
uh-huh.
yeah. How many are on this committee that you're, you know?
Well, it has just expanded. I would say probably 15, maybe.
Okay. And do you have a special responsibility on the committee? Or are you just a
member? I personally.
You personally.
No.
You're not secretary or treasurer. You're just one of those?
Yes.
Okay. And this new project is this grant that has just been given to build these new units.
Yes.
And where will they be located?
Well, they will be located on the same grounds as Sarum Village. So
is it going to be, are they going to be like toward the White Hart, or are they going to be more toward Noble?
I really don't know.
Okay.
I would say more toward Noble, but I'm not sure of that.
When do you meet?
We meet monthly. I know our next meeting is the end of April.
And where do you meet?
At Town Hall.
Anything that I haven't asked you about this particular section of your life that I should ask? How long have you been on this committee?
At least 5 years, I would say.
Okay. How did you get involved with this one?
I don't know.
You just kind of go fluidly from one to another.
That's right.
All right. Mm-hmm. Now, when we were talking the last time, you had a story that you told me that Lubu Cherry was giving a talk about the anniversary of St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody had the story that they told. And mm-hmm. would you tell that story, please?
Oh, because I love his story.
It's a beautiful story.
All right. And it was Heather Kaler who
told the story. Right.
She said that the people at the Congregational Church, the women especially, were concerned about people living up on Mount Riga, who were called the Raggies in those days, and that they never came down into town, and especially never came to church. And people began to be concerned about that, and so the women in the church said, maybe they're not coming because they don't have nice clothing, so let's do a clothing drive. So they did, the women at the Congregational Church had this amazing, wonderful clothing drive where they collected tons of clothing for men, women, children, brought it up there to the families at the top of Mount Riga. And the first Sunday came, and none of the families showed up for church. The second Sunday came, still no families. So after the third Sunday came, and there were still no families from Mount Riga at church, somebody from the church, the Congregational Church, went up there and said, we've given you these nice clothes, and you still haven't come down to church. And one of the women said, oh, well, the clothes were so beautiful. We got all cleaned up, we put on these beautiful clothes, and they were so nice, we came down and went to the Episcopal Church.
Wonderful story. Wonderful story.
I thought it was fun.
It is. It's great. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to this interview before we close? Or shall we end on that story?
We could end on that story. I feel fortunate to be living in this town.
And we're fortunate to have you.
Thank you
so much.